Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Next week marks the beginning of the South Dakota legislative session. We caught up with several incoming lawmakers over the past few weeks. Today, we hear from Dan Ahlers from Del Rapids.
Yeah, I spent time in the legislature from 2007 to 2010, and then I lost in a really close race in the Senate by lost by like 1%, a couple hundred votes, and took some time off. And yeah, I'm a small business owner in Dallas, so as these issues that have come up with like Gear Up and EB-5, the teacher pay, you know, the last 5 years I've had people in my hometown asking me, when am I going to run again? When are you going to run again? And this year, it all kind of came together. The issues were right. The passion, the drive was still there for me. And I ultimately, the most important thing is I have my wife's permission. So that helps out a lot.
Because you have a young family. So it's definitely something that affects everybody at home with spending time away in Pierre. And the business, yeah.
Yeah, certainly it does. And for me, being a business owner in Dallas, it allows me to take my kids to school, pick them up if they're sick. You know, I have a little bit of flexibility, and that all certainly falls on my wife when I'm gone to Pierre.
Sure. You put EB-5 and Gear Up in the same sentence as teacher pay, as things that happened when you weren't there that made you want to come back. And obviously those are not in the same category. So what is it about teacher pay and the education reform that unfolded last year that inspired you to come back?
Well, you know, it's symptomatic of the problem you see in our state government as a whole. It's about having, we always deal with things when it's in crisis mode. So in this case, it's a teacher shortage. And it's not like the legislature and the executive branch haven't been told that this problem was coming. It's been coming for a long time. We're not competitive with states like Wyoming, and we're not competitive with states like Minnesota. Both of our universities that focus on education are right next to the borders on either side of the state. And we lose a lot of great teachers to those states because they pay so much more. You know, we're not just talking a couple thousands of dollars. We're talking about 10 grand. Mm-hmm. I mean, who wouldn't want to make 10 grand more coming out of college to do the same job? So the problems like this have been festering for a while, and our legislature and our leaders don't act until there's a big problem. You see it with criminal justice reform. We didn't see any of that until our prison population was so large, twice the size of North Dakota, and they said, well, we got to do something about it, or we're going to have to build another penitentiary, another facility that the state can't afford. Mm-hmm. You saw that with roads. It wasn't until we started having bridge closures and roads turning back into gravel that people said, hey, we need to do something about it. But it was there, and we were being told about it. Your workforce development issue that was brought up several times during the election cycle, all of that is stuff that we've known for years. When I was on appropriations the first time around, the university said, we need to ramp up these programs. Wind energy is going to be big. We need a master's in social work because we send them out of state to get educated, and then we can't get them back here. But the state refused to act. Leadership refused to act. And that's very frustrating for me. I like to see the big picture and things. Obviously, there's things that need to be taken care of today and right now. But as a whole, our leadership lacks vision. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, having a long-term goals, a vision for the long-term direction of our state saves us money. Mm-hmm.
How do you take that vision and being proactive? What are some of your priorities this session that you can say these are ways, get specific about ways that we can be more proactive this year?
Well, certainly going in and looking at education as an example, people are in their comments to me, listening to other legislators, they think that this sales tax increase that went to teacher pay was the solution to the problem. And that isn't the solution, it's a step. We need to look long-term how we're going to fund these needs ongoing. As you can tell, sales tax revenues are down. you hit a recession, but the costs increase for education continue to go up at a far greater rate than what we're compensating. So this year, I'll be looking at the governor's proposal. He's proposed a 1% increase for providers and education. Well, I'm going to look into the budget from the last couple of years. I've already asked for that information, and I'm combing over it now to look and see if there are areas that we can cut move money in order to increase that in rate of inflation, even if it's a 0.5%, just so that we can try and keep up with our neighbors and stay competitive. Because if we just raise the sales tax and we take this money that's here now, and from the governor's budget address, you always could see that there was a decline in sales tax revenues this year. We will be where we were last year within 5 years.
You've been in peer before. You're going back now. Initiated measure 22. Have you noticed a difference? And what difference has that made for you this year?
Well, there have been fewer gatherings with your groups, like your medical physicians, your dentists, chiropractors. You have fewer get-togethers with these different interest groups out there. Now, I say interest groups, but I don't mean that in a bad way. Mm-hmm. Usually, you're meeting with your utilities co-ops, and they're telling you what they're working on, not necessarily legislation, but where they're moving, so you have an understanding of what's going on. It's more educational. It's not always about money. I think that's usually the perception. We're having fewer of those events because they're nervous about the money, the $100 gift deal. I've suggested that just charge us for the meal. Mm. And those events that I've gone to, I just pay for the meal.
Mm. So not a huge obstacle in your mind.
Does no.
Does there have to be food involved? Can you just get together? Would you not go to an event that you were invited to because you weren't going to be fed?
No, that wouldn't be the case for me. I think the reason they do that is it's an atmosphere. Usually those events happen around a breakfast or a dinner because they're trying to get us there when we're not busy with our regular
sure.
jobs.
Okay.
So I think that's why you see that.
Everybody has to eat, so let's eat together is sort of the idea.
Yeah, it's more of a social event. It's there to get informed, and I think it kind of, like you said, I think they think a few more people will show up, if it fits into a schedule. Mm-hmm. And offering beverages. Just offering coffee. They're worried about just offering coffee, water, and juice. Mm-hmm. To me, that I'm not as concerned about that. I'm not going to dismiss initiating Measure 22. I respect that the voters have voted for this. I see some advantages to it. There'll be a lot of junk that I won't have coming back from session, a bunch of coasters and paperweights and notepads. So, there's certainly a plus there, but in all seriousness, I don't dismiss it. I was a little disappointed that the governor dismissed it and said that the voters were hoodwinked into voting for this, like they were scammed into it. I think that while voters may not have fully understood the entire scope of that 70 pages, I think that it's reflective of how they feel about their government. And I think as legislators, we need to respect that. And I don't really have any conflicts that I found with initiated Measure 22. So as a, a legislator, I'm fine. I know that, the fact that we're a small state, that we're so connected. I can go anywhere in this state and I'm going to run into somebody that I know.
Right. Yeah.
I can go on vacation in Hill City, South Dakota. And last time my son and I went there this fall, we ran into three people that I knew within the first couple of hours.
Well, before we hit record, we realized we had two people in common that we knew. So yeah, I totally get that.
So we
our lives connect and we've never met before, you and I.
Right. And we need to find a way to make initiated Measure 22 work with the reality of that.
Sure.
And I don't think that's too difficult. I'm a little disappointed with legislators as a whole that are making a really big deal out of this. I think that we can make this work. Mm-hmm. We just, you know, and it may involve a little tweaking, but I have urged our leadership to get in touch with the folks in South Dakota that have worked so hard on getting this passed, whether it's Rick Weiland or Dre Samuelson. I know Rick Noby spent a lot of time working on these nonpartisan issues. So bring these guys to the table and let's find out a way to make this work.
Interesting. Any other things that you're really looking forward to about getting back to peer?
Well, I'm back on appropriations, and I really enjoy that. And that's a role that I take very seriously. And I like working with the departments. I've met with some of the folks from the departments already. They're very excited to with the folks that are going to be there this year on appropriations. We have a lot of new members, so having folks like myself and Gene Hunhoff and Deb Peters that are coming back, that have some experience there, that brings a little ease to the departments because they don't have to start from scratch.
Dan Ahlers is from Dell Rapids. Thoughts from more incoming lawmakers will air in the coming week. Plus, tomorrow on the program, we sit down with Lieutenant Governor Matt Michaels. When we come back, you haven't given up on your New Year's resolutions already, have you? Mental health counselor Jim Green is with us to talk about changing habits, self-worth, and how to know when you need help changing your life. You're in the moment. SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. Jim Green is a mental health counselor specializing in addiction recovery with Avera Behavioral Health. During this first week of January, we continue to look at popular New Year's resolutions from various angles. Today, we talk about changing habits. One key takeaway is an understanding of your own worth, says Jim Green. He's been working in the mental health field since 1983. I started by asking him how much has changed in the field since the mid-80s.
I don't think the problems really changed. I guess we've got some more problems that are associated with technology and those type of things. Video games and phones and computers, and they also give us access to stuff that easier to obtain certain things, which have caused problems with people. But I'm kind of belief that goes back to that healthy relationships in our growing up and in our adulthood that are really what's important. And most of the things that take us away from that are not so good for us. Yeah. They can be a variety of things.
Has the pace of society accelerated, and have you seen that in your work? Because it feels like that to many people I talk to, but maybe it's always been like that.
Well, I had a good example here not too long ago, argument between a son and a father. It was kind of the father's fault. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, it would be very appropriate to kind of make amends, to call him up and to just say, you're sorry, you made a mistake, you didn't mean to hurt him, and, to kind of take care of business and bring some closure to that. And he said, I'll just text him. And, that's, in my view, when you text, that's pretty cold and it's subject to interpretation by the people receiving it, and then none of the emotion comes through with that. Hmm. You can type I'm sorry or you can say I'm sorry, and it can be two vastly different things. And yet that is something that many people go for. And those type of things also lead to a lot of conflict in relationships where there's not a lot of trust, because they can always investigate your phone or your email or whatever and see really what you're doing. And if you're not trusting somebody to begin with, that can undermine any relationship.
It's the season for changing habits. It's January. And I'm wondering how complex is it to change a habit, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's very complex, because really to be successful in changing a habit, you've got to kind of work that out of your head and replace that with a healthier one. And so that takes time and it takes practice. And various people have say, you know, you got to do something for 90 days before it gets established as a habit, or do it so many times a day for so long until it really becomes a habit. But really what we're trying to do is kind of rewire the brain for that. So it takes an effort, and you can accentuate that by being realistic in what you're trying to change, and maybe break it down into smaller steps and take them on one at a time, and working towards something. I think that would be that way you don't feel so overwhelmed and you don't give up so easy.
Are some resolutions better than others? How do we even approach, you know, even if we take the word resolution out of it and we just say, I want to make a change in my life. How do we begin?
Well, I think you would want to spend some time maybe really thinking about what change you want to see, or what resolution you want to try and change, and then again kind of break that down into steps, and then proceed at a smaller scale, and let you grow into the full resolution later, mm-hmm. at a later date, so that you're meeting a lot of success in the early stages. You're not getting burnt out, you're not having a lot of failures even in it, and you can pick up and continue if you do have a failure. And then I think the element that's sometimes missing is that we say that we want to make changes, and one of the things I believe you have to do is you have to have somebody hold you accountable and be supportive of that, and somebody to maybe check with you weekly to see how you're doing. You know, if you're giving up smoking, or if you're trying to lose weight or something, somebody that can support you and also hold you accountable and affirm your efforts. And so there's a little bit more to it than just holding yourself responsible, because when we fail, when we hold ourselves responsible, sometimes we're more accepting of that, and we give up easier.
So how do you support somebody who wants to make a change but then they stumble?
I think you build that relationship before, and then the honesty and the genuineness with them, and the encouragement, and understand that what we're trying to change is pretty strong, and it's in our history. And so there is a tendency, whether we can control that or not, of going backwards. Because the thing about habits and stuff is that there's a great degree of comfort with them. That's why we get them. There's a kind of a safety with it, and a predictability. And so when we're going out with something new, we have to know that there may be times where we have a slip or we have a fall, but we can pick ourselves up and keep going again. And I think that's what the sponsor can, or a person that's sponsoring us or supporting us can remind us, that it's only a small trip, let's say, in this journey, that we can get up and continue on. And then also give credit for how successful you have been, and that we'll just keep going with it.
So how do we handle failure on our own terms then, if we do slip? Like, you know, failure hurts.
Yes, definitely. And I think we have to kind of understand our own humanness, if you will, and kind of that sometimes we're harsher on ourselves than we would be on others, and learn to, you know, kind of support ourselves and see ourselves in a positive light. And, you know, to challenge our thoughts even, you know, so we're looking at even some basic therapy type of tips here, is that, and worthiness isn't a good thing, that you can do this, and maybe find examples of where you have made changes that you were successful at. And and so draw upon that positive history too, not just the negative stuff that has impacted us. So it's all possible, but, and then keep going. It's, you know, stay strong and stay inspired, and get the feedback from the people you need to believe in you, and take care of yourself. And so a lot of it, I mean, I think it's possible, but it isn't as easy as we'd like it to be.
Let's talk about, you mentioned worthiness, and just let's talk about being worthy of the change that we seek in our lives. What does that mean for you?
Well, I think worthiness is a concept that it's important to us, that we're capable, and that we're strong enough, and we're worthy of support, that people have our back, or should have our back. And if we don't have that, we can work on that too, to come to understand that we are worthy, and that we are important, and we are lovable. And until we really understand and can accept that, any kind of change is going to be difficult, and failure is going to be more acceptable, because if we see ourselves as a failure, then we have to live out that kind of definition. And so we accept failure as opposed to seeing ourselves as strong and successful and lovable and all that good stuff. And so that gives us a strength that we just pick up and continue then. Hmm. So it's a lot of self-awareness and self-esteem kind of things. And those are all things that we can work on a daily basis, too. I mean, you hear a lot of people come into that. I've got low self-esteem. My self-esteem really hurts. Well, self-esteem isn't something you arrive at. Self-esteem and self-confidence are things that you do every day, but you own them. You see them as positive steps in self-control, self-confidence, and so you track them. I think people sometimes get this kind of magical thing that self-confidence is something that's, or self-esteem is a destination that maybe someday I'll get there. But the truth is you work on that every day, and you will get there, but you have to work on it.
That's very human. I'm guilty of that. I feel like I should always have already arrived. Mm-hmm. And then when I have to struggle with something, I'm like, oh, here we go. Here we go again.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of our nature, and yeah. I think that's a message we get in media, too, is like, you know, you're overweight, so if you take this food or these pills, you know, in 30 days, you'll lose 20 pounds. And, you know, for most of us, that's unrealistic, but that's what we want. So we have to step back and look at it and talk to people and figure things out. We're certainly worthy of being thinner, but we have realistically, we have to know that that's an area that we have to work in. We kind of live in a black and white world, and there's a lot of gray there. And so we got to get through the gray to get to the success that we deserve and that we want.
Do you enjoy the process of really helping people work through that? What do you enjoy about that process?
It's kind of like when the lights come on, when they finally understand what it takes and then the successes after that. It can be indeed be life-changing. Mm-hmm. I have a patient now that's kind of just graduated, and it was important for him to obtain that because he said, I've never finished anything. And this is a gentleman in his mid-50s that had, you know, I don't think he completed high school, and he just, you know, and so to him to complete therapy was quite a thing for him, and he's doing very well, and he feels positive about himself and his effort, and so that's all good. But when you see somebody kind of turn the corner and the lights come on and all of a sudden, oh, I get it now, or you help him look at something and you just suggest a different view of that same event, and they do that and they get it, and it's that's what it's all about. Mm. I mean, it's taking care of people, being compassionate and kind and all those good things.
How do you know when you need professional help and when you can just take some steps between you, your friends, and sort of get started on your way? How do you know when it's time to really engage a professional counselor?
Excellent. Excellent question. I think any time is a good time to, you know, if you're trying to make changes, specifically significant changes. But the bottom line is if you've tried a number of times and have been unsuccessful, then it's a good time to reach out to a support group or a therapist or something like that, because my belief is that you can be successful, but sometimes we need that outside person to see things that we're missing and to challenge our thinking and to help us move ahead. And, you know, we're Midwesterners. We're all stubborn and think if we don't talk about it, if we don't do anything, we'll be okay at some point. And when that doesn't get changed for years, it drags us into all kinds of things. So if you can step back from what you're, you know, whether it's a weight issue or a smoking issue or a mental health issue, and you find yourself stuck there, which means you're not getting better, you're just kind of repeating that, well, then that's time to see if you can't get motivated to seek professional help or get into a support group where people can build that supportive relationship, which I think is vital, and you find out that you're not you're not unique to the world, that we all need each other in order to progress in a healthier way.
There are barriers to reaching out and getting that kind of help. Maybe it's an insurance barrier for someone or a financial barrier or just a family barrier where their family might not support support their journey in a healthy way. What are some of those obstacles you sort of wish you could remove for people so they can get the help they need?
Affordable, making it affordable. And I think Avira does a good job with that. And there are other nonprofit agencies that are helpful for that too. So, and it's kind of, again, kind of being a Midwesterner, there's that stigma of getting help, which is kind of threatening to a lot of people. But, you know, I always try to let people know you can not change and stay miserable, or you can take the risk of going to see somebody and with the opportunity maybe to get some help and to be moving in a healthy direction. And that's something I believe we all deserve. It's just that sometimes culturally your family hold us back for that. So, and so again, going back to if you've tried and tried and tried and you just can't do it on your own, which is probably more the case than anything, is reach out. I mean, all you're going to do is find somebody that really can help you get better, or in a support group, you're going to find a group of people that have struggled with the same stuff in terms of and with different types of successes, but they will help you keep moving and keep active in your growth and in your development of healthier patterns and habits, and that's all good.
You said self-esteem is something we can work on every day, or it's something that we sort of build every day. What are some of the ways that we can intentionally sort of address our own self-worth on a daily basis?
I think, you know, do whatever you do, do as well as you can, work or at home. I think kindness is a great way. You know, let that person pull in front of you when you're, you know, in traffic. Slow down if there's somebody that needs to cross the street. Slow down, stop, and let them cross. You know, maybe helping an elderly person rake their lawn or something like that. Acts of kindness are really good at that. And be grateful for the things that you have, too. I think sometimes is, you know, becoming aware that maybe I don't have it so bad, and that I should be happy with what I got, and then build off of that too. I think it's just things that we take for normal, and sometimes we do them because we were taught to do them, and sometimes they are habits. But we just because it's already established as a habit doesn't mean we can't say that I did good there or congratulate yourself for doing that. And then I always tell my clients that it's like a self-esteem meter, and every time you do something nice, it clicks to the upper end again. So it's a gradually, you keep doing that, you become more believing in yourself, and your self-esteem goes up and your confidence goes up. So it's a series of things you do that get you to having a high self-esteem.
So kindness, gratitude, relationships help us increase our own self-worth. Does that surprise people when you sort of take that tack with them?
Well, I think sometimes it does, because part of what you do is in that kind of taking on a person's self-esteem is if it's negative, they really believe that they're, you know, whatever, that they're a loser, that they don't count, that they're unimportant. And, you know, you kind of, and that's probably been ingrained for a while. So you gradually show them steps to combat that. And then I always encourage them to own that to say, see, you can do this. You're not powerless on this. And you can change how you see yourself. It takes action on your part. And that's risky and sometimes scary, but that's how you get to be the happy, successful person that you desire. And it's attainable.
What about those folks who sort of live their life giving to others and in service to others, but forget to take care of themselves?
Another good question. I call those caretakers. Sometimes I think what you could see with them is sometimes caretakers are caretakers because they believe that that raises their self-esteem, you know, which it might. But the difference is some people that are caretakers have to feel very obligated to take care of everybody and to do everything. And at some point, I think they get kind of burned out or worn down, and they discover that all of the stuff they're doing doesn't necessarily feel good inside. It looks good, but it doesn't necessarily feel good. So my message to them is consider taking care of yourself first. Then you have the choice to help others. You don't feel obligated because you can't do everything. But if you have the choice, you can choose who you want to help, how you want to help them, and you can own that then, because that's the decision you make, and that gives you back your personal power, and it doesn't drag you down then at the end, because you remain in control.
A mental health counselor, Jim Green, is with Avera Behavioral Health.
An elementary school assembly in Mitchell yesterday took an unexpected turn. Teachers and students walked into an assembly they thought focused on a character program. Instead, they found local and state dignitaries who revealed the real reason they got together. SDPB's Keely Boltina takes you there.
Kids shuffle into the gym at Mitchell's Longfellow Elementary. Members of the student council are easy to spot. They're scooting together in the corner of the gym with yellow and red superhero logos leaping off of bright blue t-shirts. After the Pledge of Allegiance, the superhero student council sings a song.
Be a hero, be a hero, be a hero.
Teacher Amanda Christensen performs the actions as she sings with her students. She has a matching superhero shirt, and she sits on the floor with the kids when the assembly resumes. She listens as South Dakota Secretary of Education Melody Schopp flabbergasts students with information about technology when she was in school.
When I was in elementary school, believe it or not, there were no computers. And guess what? There were no cell phones. Can you believe that? And we did not have the internet.
And then South Dakota Governor Dennis Dugard demonstrates how many students attended his one-room school, explains he was the only student in his grade, and pokes fun at the education secretary.
Dr. Schopp was talking about when she was your age, there were no computers. She must be very old, don't you think? That was a long time ago. Oh, my.
During the assembly, fourth grade teacher Amanda Christensen cares for her students. She quietly encourages them to sit and listen, and she adjusts seating as necessary. It's elementary school, after all.
Hello, Longfellow Elementary School. Let's try that again. Hello, Longfellow Elementary School. Wow, you guys.
Greg Gallagher with the Milken Family Foundation takes the microphone. He says he's traveled 1,600 miles from California to reveal a secret. One of Mitchell's teachers is a 2017 recipient of the Milken Educator Award.
The first thing the teacher gets is one big surprise, because you can't apply and we don't accept nominations. You don't find us, we find you. We search, we go all over the country to find the best of the best. The second thing the teacher gets is a lot of celebration and recognition, as you can see by all the distinguished guests that are here, including Governor Dugard and First Lady. And the media is here to cover it. But most importantly, all of you students are here to see it firsthand. Next, the teacher joins a team. This is an elite all-star education team with other Milken educators that received the Milken Award. The recipient will also receive an all-expenses-paid trip to New Orleans, Louisiana, to participate in a Milken Educator Award forum. And there is something else. The teacher is going to receive a financial award. Raise your hand if you can tell me what a financial award is.
The kids know it's money. Through a process involving pint-sized volunteers and adding zeros, Gallagher reveals that the teacher receives $25,000. Then he lets the governor announce her name.
Amanda Christensen.
Christensen slowly stands up from the floor. She manages a couple of hugs from students before kids in superhero shirts surround her. They're ecstatic. She is speechless.
Oh my goodness. I have no idea what to say. You guys, this is amazing. I'm absolutely blown away. This wouldn't be possible. I feel like I don't know.
Christensen manages a few sentiments before the kids clap, the assembly wraps, and students head back to class.
Thank you, 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 thank you so much. Thank you so much. Oh my gosh.
Christensen is one of 35 people in the country this year who are Milken Educator Award winners.
The Milken Family Foundation chose Mitchell Elementary teacher Amanda Christensen because they say she uses forward-thinking teaching methods that encourage 21st century skills. Christensen emphasizes open-end discussions to encourage students to question, and she says she wants students to solve problems together. A few minutes after finding out she'd won an honor that comes with $25,000, SDPB's Keely Boltina walked with Christensen to her classroom where they had this discussion.
You look happy, you look a little overwhelmed, you're beaming, but there are a lot of things going through your head, I think.
Absolutely. I am in complete shock. When they said my name, I was instantly swarmed by my students, which was awesome. But I just feel like this is really a school award. I just am so honored to work with the people I work with. And yes, there's a million things running through my head right now. I don't even know what to think. I'm still in shock. So,
I was eavesdropping on your conversation with the representative from Milken, and you said, how did this happen? I'm just from Mitchell, South Dakota.
I'm still questioning that. I can't believe that this big corporation in California found us in South Dakota, in Mitchell, South Dakota, no less, and in a population, 20,000 people here. I just can't believe it.
Walk me through the anticipation of hearing how the assembly kind of turned from this hero motif, which, by the way, is emblazoned on your shirt. You have a big superhero shirt on today.
Well, my principal said, we're having an Ove assembly, and your student council is going to lead the song. And it was like, all right, I got this. We'll be great. Have no fear. And then here, the governor was here, and then all of the school board and all of these representatives and the city officials. And I'm like, this is, I think, a bigger deal than they made it out to be at the beginning. And I just couldn't believe it. Still can't believe it. And then when he was describing the process and the excellence in teaching, I'm like, oh, I'm just so honored to be part of this school. And I'm so thankful that someone in our district is being honored. And when they said my name, my jaw hit the floor. I just couldn't believe it.
But you keep going back to this concept of, but it's not about me, it's about the school, but it is about you, right?
We're really a team because you are who you spend the most time with. And so because I work in such an amazing district with such wonderful people, I beg, borrow, and steal all the time. Like, I consult others. How can I do this better? What am I doing wrong? How can I improve? And I just feel like because of that collaboration, you know, we are who we are. So,
Amanda Christensen, give me an example of one of those times that you have brought something to the classroom and interacted with students and you walked out and you went, that stuck. It's hard with fourth graders, I think.
My fourth graders are so bright. But I mean, honestly, anytime we read a new story, they're constantly making connections to previous conversations we had. This morning, I had a student that just returned from Thailand, and so we pulled down the map and we compared where Thailand is and talked about capitals and time zones, and it's just adapting with the thing. And now they're all eager to explore other places, and they want to do more research on time zones, and it's just their excitement. I mean, my excitement leads to their excitement. And when they're excited about learning, I mean, good things happen.
But what happens when you have a different lesson plan? You have everything looking great, and then somebody comes back from Thailand. How do you decide, no, we're going to throw that out. We're going to talk about this because it's relevant to these fourth graders in this moment. How do you make that decision, and how do you know it's effective?
It's an easy decision to make. It's terrible to say, but I mean, it's what they're eager to learn about and what they're excited about. And like everyone says, you need to relate to what your students need. And that was an amazing lesson. We'll still get to what I had planned just a little later than, from our discussion from Thailand, but we'll get there.
What do you hope your students take away from this? They got to participate in the assembly. You said that they gave you a giant hug at the end while you were just trying to process the fact that it was your name that came over the loudspeaker. How are you going to handle this with them?
I really hope that this just inspires my kids to go on and dream big dreams and accomplish great things in their lifetime. And, you know, I teach my kids about being humble and being honored. And I just hope that, you know, we can all learn a good lesson from this. Just take it all in and, you know, keep doing what we're doing because it's working.
Who's in the room with us right now?
All right, so my husband's here, Marcus Christensen, and I'm so thankful that he's here. And then my mom's here, Londa Youngstrom. I'm so thankful she's here too. And we have two beautiful children who are not here right now, but Kenley is 4 and Cooper is 2, and I love them so much.
Your husband's doing okay, but your mom's tearing up a little bit over there.
This is quite a shock. I mean, I'm going to go home tonight, and I'm sure buckets are going to be falling out of my eyes, but this is amazing, and this is very emotional, and I just never in a million years dreamt that this was possible or would happen, especially in the field of teaching. I do it because I love my kids, but to be recognized on this platform just is mind-blowing.
SDPB's Keely Boltina talking with newly named Milken Educator Award winner Amanda Christensen. She is the only teacher in South Dakota to receive the honor this year. We'll take a break. Nate Weck is up next. You're listening to In the Moment, SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. We're broadcasting live today from the SDPB studios in Vermilion, the 42nd annual Floyd Ferrand Invitational Wrestling Tournament took place over the weekend at Lincoln High School in Sioux Falls. With me in the studio to talk about that and more, SDPB's Nate Weck. Nate, welcome to In the Moment.
Hey, Lori, how are you doing today?
Excellent. So over the weekend, Floyd Ferrand Invitational Wrestling Tournament, take me there.
Yeah, it was the 42nd annual, and I had never attended this tournament before, so I kind of went into it not really knowing what to expect, went into it with an open mind. You get there and there's two gymnasiums that are full of people. You have the old gym at Lincoln High School, you've got the new gym at Lincoln High School. There's wrestling mats, multiple wrestling mats in both locations, and the stands are full of fans. So I mean, it was it was very easy to figure out where to go, because right. You walk into the concourse of the gym of the of Lincoln High School, you walk through those front doors, you just follow the yelling. Pretty easy to find out where the action's going on. But no, it's a lot of fun. Again, it was the 42nd annual this year. They've been doing it for many years, obviously. And it's kind of the reputation that this tournament has sort of grasped is it's kind of like the one of the big tournaments before you get to the regions and districts and the state championships, which of course the state championships are last weekend in February. So it's kind of that, kind of has that Mike Miller basketball classic feel to it, but just with the sport of wrestling.
And so give me an idea of just, you know, who is this? Wrestlers from all over the state? Is it?
Yeah, you've got communities as far west as Sturgis. Sturgis actually won it this year for the team award. And then they go as far east as Brandon Valley. So, I mean, you're looking, it's a statewide, it's both classes. It's not just singled down to just one class. It's got both classes. And there was 18 teams that were there this year in total that were represented in some way, shape, or form. But it was just, it was just really cool. And then I also had the opportunity to sit down with Jim Dorman. He is one of the executive directors now for the South Dakota Coaches Association. He was used to be the athletic director at Lincoln High School. This is his first year retiring, but he's still very much involved with getting the tournament going every year and organizing it, making sure teams are where they're supposed to be, making sure people know where they're supposed to change, those types of things, kind of the housekeeping types of deals. And, you know, he kind of actually sat down with me, too, and talked a little bit about the demand of the event and just how many teams want to. And it turns out there's a waiting list. We do have a bite from Jim Dorman. Let's play that now. He kind of talks a little bit about that.
We invite the teams back every year that have been here. Some will drop out. And then what we do is we pretty much have a waiting list of schools, and then we start going down through that waiting list. And of course, with the number of matches that schools can actually participate in, some schools are not able, you know, to get in right away. So then we just keep going down the list.
So Sturgis wins. What, any other big, you know, sort of results from that you want to share with us?
You know, for me, you know, obviously, I know there's a lot of news media's there kind of covering the event and types of that with the results. For me, it was more of just about getting a sense of what the sport of wrestling is like outside of the state championships.
Okay, sure.
And to see the energy, to see the passion be just as strong as it's going to be when all of the schools come together at the end of February at the Premier Center in Sioux Falls, to see that energy already. I mean, it kind of makes me wish that state wrestling was this weekend, because it does get you hyped up. And and if you go in to it not necessarily with a professional head on your shoulders, you can get lost in that moment and just find yourself just staring at the mats, just watching the wrestlers do what they're doing. You know?
I understand so little about wrestling. You could probably tell that just sitting with me. I'm like, explain. So just sit there and really watch it is what you have to do. I have to spend some time with it to really kind of get what's going on and appreciate
Yeah, it does take some time to sort of kind of pick up on sure. what things you want to have happen, what things you don't want to have happen.
It's intricate.
It is, yeah. And uh-huh. And I think if you sat, Laurie, and you watched it for about an hour, hour and a half, you'd probably pick up a lot more than you.
Because
yeah. I mean, that was kind of my, you know, a few years ago, that was kind of my first real thing. You know, I wasn't a wrestler in high school or anything like that, but it was like, you know, getting kind of just thrown into just kind of watching it, and it's a lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be. It's actually one of the more exciting events of the year now that I look forward to, just because yeah. it's so fun, and to see the discipline that each individual kid has to have,
right.
And on top of that, they're also part of a team. So there's an individual side, plus there's the team aspect of it as well. And you need to have a good head on every one of those individual shoulders if you want the team to succeed.
Some maturity there, too. Yep. Give me an idea who Floyd Ferrant is, because I have not heard that name yet either.
Well, he was a longtime athletic director for Sioux Falls Lincoln, and he was one of the people that actually got the event started. He actually passed away a few years ago in 2013,
okay.
But his presence is still very well felt at Lincoln High School, and through the voice of Jim Dorman again, who I spoke to, and he actually also gave a little thought on who Floyd Ferrant actually was.
Floyd was one of those special athletic directors in the state that started out back when coaches were athletic directors and they had to do all the scheduling and everything else, along with being a great classroom teacher, from what I've heard. He made that transition then once the athletic director's position became a full-time position. A little-known fact probably is the National Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association started a certified athletic administrators certification, and Floyd was one of the very first ones in the nation. I think there were just a handful of athletic directors across the nation that became certified, and he was in that first initial class.
Nate Weck is here with us in the studio talking about the Floyd Ferrant Invitational Wrestling Tournament. Nate, thanks for coming. Give us an idea of what's coming up from the digital team at South Dakota Public Broadcasting now.
We're going to continue our coverage of all of the high school fine arts events and the sports events, things like that. Starting in February, the first week in February, the one-act play festival yeah. is underway, and then we've got gymnastics and, of course, state wrestling, and then we've got a little thing called the state basketball championships that come into place. I mean, the month of February and March are two really big months for us. And the best thing that people can do if they want to stay in touch and know how all of that's going to play out, the best thing you can do is just go on to our Facebook page, SDPB Sports. Give us a like, because when we're at those events, we're constantly plastering those pages with tons of information to help keep people up to date with what's going on.
Nate Weck, thanks for being here today. We appreciate your time. We'll see you next week. That is our program for today. We hope that it served you. Thanks to all our guests. Tomorrow on the program, Lieutenant Governor Matt Michaels is with us, plus Tech Radio with Kent Osborne during our second hour. I'm Lori Walsh. Meet me at 11 Central, 10 Mountain. Thanks for listening.